It's The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
When you see a gentleman be around a lady be buzzing, just count to ten, then count again. There's sure to be an even dozen. A multiplication, that's the name of the game. And each generation, they play the same. Now there was two butterflies casting their eyes, both in the same direction.
The great Bobby Darin, real name Walden Robert Casado. Multiplication, a fine song. Hey, Michael Story is quite a storyteller, and he's an interesting guy. He is described as a GJP super forecaster and the director at the Swift Center. He's also developed a Substack following, which is quite substantial, and writes about a whole bunch of interesting subjects on there. Michael, thanks so much for joining me on the radio. Appreciate it.
Oh, thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
Michael, let me, because you are calling from across the pond, let me get you to weigh in on the subject that we just dealt with. I think the United States should consider converting to the metric system. As somebody that has spent a fair amount of time on both continents, what would be your opinion of something like that?
Oh, I don't know. That's very tricky. I think, like most people, right, the old metric system is sort of more practical, but there's a romance to the imperial system, right? It's sort of traditional and it makes you feel more nostalgic. So when I go to the US, I really enjoy that things are sort of still in feet and inches and so on. It's a very nice feeling. So I think that the cost of switching would be high.
Yeah, no, that's something that a lot of listeners raise. I don't see. Well, whatever. We'll save that. I mean, if romance and nostalgia is the reason to keep it, I think we'd still be reading from telegrams instead of emails and faxes instead of text messages. But that's not neither here nor there. Hey, I introduced you as what your Twitter biography describes you as a GJP super forecaster. What is GJP?
Oh, okay. Well, that's pull up that thread. So a few years ago in the U.S., there's an institution, a U.S. government institution called IARPA, which is the intelligence equivalent of ARPA and DARPA. IARPA does Intelligence Advanced Research Project Activity. That's what it stands for. And they set up a contest to make predictions about the future. Which is kind of how a lot of defense procurement stuff works, right? They run a big contest, and then teams can enter, and you can like win prizes. And I joined a team which entered this competition to try and make accurate predictions about the future. And the team that I was part of won, and so that was kind of long story short. They won we won by kind of building teams of people that were consistently more accurate at predicting the future. And those people were known as super forecasters. And so that's my history there. And that's actually why I ended up needing to get a bit more comfortable with aeroplanes, because I was living in London at the time. And the project was based at UPenn, at Wharton. And of course, it's to kind of go and visit people that I was involved in this project with. Required me to cross the Atlantic,
sure.
And it became impractical to do that through any other means than airplanes.
Yeah, can you give us maybe just one example of a trend or something that we can look forward to in the future that you foresee?
Oh, I don't know. That's tricky. Oh, you really put me on the spot.
I don't know. We asked the tough questions.
I don't know. That's tricky.
All right, fair enough. All right, well, we'll have you back on that subject. All right. How long you have this great column on Substack, and I'm going to share it on my Facebook page if people haven't seen it at facebook.com/MoranoFan about overcoming your fear of flying. How long had you had a fear of flying long distances?
Oh, probably about 10 years. So when I was a kid, I flew and it was totally fine. And then I think when I was in my late teens, I suddenly started to find it very unsettling. And there wasn't really an incident that sort of brought it about, but I just started to think about it and think, oh no, this isn't natural, this isn't right, you know, where you know, people shouldn't be up in the sky, this doesn't feel kind of correct in some way. And I just started to get very, very, very uncomfortable with it, to the point that I just felt, if I take a job somewhere, or need to visit somewhere, I'm just going to drive, I'll take a boat, I'll take a train, I'll go anywhere, but I just won't go in a plane to do it. So for about 10 years, I traveled. Yeah, I still traveled a lot, and I went all over the place, but I just would do anything to avoid going in a plane. I would drive, you know, 2,000 miles rather than fly in a plane, which takes, you know, a long time, staying in motels and so on. And I would just do anything to avoid going in a plane. And I remember taking like a trip with my family, and and I was like, okay, I'll meet you there. We're going to go on vacation. So I'll meet you there. I'm going to drive. And I was driving, you know, for 4 or 5 days. And then my, you know, parents would text me the morning of the day I was going to arrive, saying, hey, we're just setting off at the airport. We'll see you this afternoon. You know, and I just remember thinking, this is crazy. You know, what are you doing? Like, you're spending this enormous amount of effort to avoid getting in a plane. But when you really are uncomfortable with something, that just feels like a very natural thing to do. It just seems like such a big deal, and then it's very hard to confront.
You know, that's so interesting. And in reading your piece, that's what I wondered. I wondered if there was some incident, whether it was the terrorist attacks on September 11th or seeing the movie Die Hard 2, which led you to develop this sudden fear of flying long distances. But it doesn't sound like there was any sort of impetus for it. It sounds like this is something that sort of just developed in your own brain without necessarily an immediate clear cause.
Well, it crept up on me, but I will say, so my experience of this was, yeah, it just crept up on me. My friends tell me, so my father was in a plane which sort of crashed. I don't know whether you could fully call it crash. He survived. Pretty much everybody was fine, but he was in a plane that kind of went off the end of a runway and went into a field in Ethiopia. And my friends say, you know, well, maybe this had something to do with it.
I
but
see.
That was when I was much younger. You know, I was about 5 when that happened. And so I, you know, I'm not sure that that ever, you know, I don't know. People would say, well, you know, if you've had a close family member, you've had a bit of a close shade, you know, maybe that sort of drives you in some way to develop this type of attitude. But, you know, from 5 onwards, I just thought, oh, this is fine. I get on the plane and just think, oh, great, now I'm going somewhere nice. Let's enjoy that. And then just suddenly it started to go. And I don't know. So it's possible that it developed as a result of that exposure. And yeah, I mean, it's silly to say it, but I mean, in the 90s, I lived in New York, where you are now, obviously, and with my family. And you know, and I, it sounds silly to say, okay, 9/11 doesn't help, but it definitely doesn't help, right?
Sure. Oh no, believe me, I get that.
Closely, and yeah, you know, you see it every day, and. It took, because I didn't fly for a long time, it was a long time before I visited New York again. And I remember, you know, the first time being there, you know, probably a decade later, and thinking, you know, the skyline just doesn't look right. And it was just a very unsettling feeling. So I think those things can impact you as well, even though it's a kind of one-off, like, freak, terrible thing that happens. And, you know, it doesn't happen very often, but it can definitely stick in your mind and really make you worry about things.
Sure. Talking with Michael Story. So when you decided that this was a fear that you needed to overcome, when you were constantly dealing with the inconvenience of driving when you needed to be flying and the practicality of needing to be at events in the United States when you were living in the UK, is that right?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, the time when I really realized I'm going to have to do something about this is I needed to attend a conference in California. So I was in London. So I'm like, okay, how am I going to get to California? I mean, I had to go. It was, you know, completely important that I had to go for my job. You know? So I was like, okay, what am I going to do? So I found a boat that would take me from Southampton to New York, the Queen Mary 2, which I'm sure you see sometimes
sure.
at docks at Brooklyn Seaport. So I was like, okay, I can get the boat to Brooklyn. And then I'm going to get the Amtrak, and I'll get the Amtrak to Chicago. And then the Amtrak goes from Chicago all the way down to San Francisco, almost, nearly all the way there. So I did that. So there was 7 days on the boat. Then another day to Chicago, and another 2 days all the way down to San Francisco. And I realized that this is crazy. this is 11 days of travel time to get there, and there's going to be 11 days to go home. And this is not sustainable. So that was what really triggered me to realize, like, okay, you know, I'm kind of working on things that involve being in the U.S. again, and you are not gonna be able to sustain spending weeks of your life at sea on the Queen Mary in order just to attend conferences. So that's when I realized, like, oh, you've really got to crap on with this, Michael.
All right, the $1 million question, or the 1.3 million euro question, depending on what system we're in. How did you do it? How were you able to overcome your fear of flying, which was so, I'll call it, paralyzing, that it led you to spend hours more traveling than necessary?
So it was brute force. So what I did is I just decided you've just got to do this until you get comfortable with it. You know, you've just got to make yourself do it. And I couldn't find any other way around it. I went on courses. Like, I don't know if you've experienced this, but a lot of airlines will have like a class that you can go to for a weekend, and it's run by the airline. And you can kind of go and stay in a hotel at the airport for the weekend. And they take you on a tour of the plane, and you can sort of, you know, look at the plane when it's on the ground and kind of see it all and look at it from underneath, and kind of they show you, you know, how safe it is and all the safety systems and stuff. And it's supposed to be reassuring. And I did that, and I did those courses, the weekend classes and stuff, and I was still felt the same afterwards. In fact, I went to one of those classes for a weekend, and then they had another. I didn't work, and I thought, oh, maybe I just didn't pay enough attention. So a few months later, they ran another class, and I went back. And I recognized a few other guys from the first time. I said, oh, I didn't work on you either. You know, we were all back. Like, you know, we all had to be held back a grade, I think, so, because we were still terrified. So eventually I was like, oh, I've just got to do this. So I decided, I'm just going to start doing this. I'm going to make a rule. You have to fly every 10 days. That's a reasonable amount of time. So, you've got to fly every 10 days.
Just to reiterate, Michael, so you went through two classes to overcome your fear of flying. Those didn't work. So you said, okay, I'm still afraid of flying. I'm now going to start flying once every 10 days.
Yeah, I just said, I'll just go somewhere. Doesn't matter where it is. Luckily, at the time, I was living in London, so pretty near Heathrow Airport, nice, busy airport, lots of flights. And I would just go on these apps, you know, Skyscanner or whatever, similar to that, the Google Flights is pretty good now. And you would just go on these apps, and I would just search for what's the cheapest destination I can fly to and from, you know, in a day. I can fly in the morning and fly back in the evening, and I'll just do something nice while I'm there to kind of deal with it, you know, go to lunch somewhere, go to an art gallery, go and see something. And I'll just do it. I'll just take the cheapest flight I can find. Doesn't matter where it goes. I'm just going to go there and tolerate it. And I'll go. And so I set myself this target of like once every 10 days, you have to go on a plane to go somewhere. And I did that for 2 years. Basically, it took 2 years before I felt like, okay, you finally feel like this is comfortable. But it was it turned out very cool, which is what I read in the article. But it was, it turned out to be actually, you know, initially it was pretty stressful. It's not very nice to do something that you have a kind of a genuine phobia of that you find very, very difficult. But once I started to get into the rhythm of it, you know, it actually became really fun. And you know, people would start suggesting places to me, or if they found some super cheap deal, they would send it my way. They'd say, hey, look, you know, you can fly this plane here, or let's go here. And it started to just open up so many, just open up a lot of opportunities that I wasn't expecting.
It give folks an idea of understanding that you were seeking the least expensive flight to continue to engage in this experiment on. Give folks an idea over 2 years of your flight fear training, how much you spent in airline tickets.
Oh, goodness. I've never added up, and I'm not sure I want to know. I think that, I don't know. I would say sometimes it was, I don't know. It was probably quite a lot, to be fair. I think sometimes it's pretty good, right? If you just went on a little trip from London to Copenhagen or something, you could do that for a day, and that might set you back maybe £70 or $100 or something like that. Return, some of those are pretty cheap. But sometimes it was further, and sometimes if it was a holidays or whatever, then it would be, of course, the flight prices go up at those times. sometimes somebody else would pay for it. Like I would, you know, if someone invited me to speak in a conference, they'd pay my airfare, so they would cover the cost if I was going to go and do something like that. So I don't know. I never added it up. But it's got to be in the thousands, I guess. Yeah.
I would think so. And so is this strategy of taking whatever you're afraid of and forcing yourself to do it every 10 days, is this a playbook that can be used for people conquering other fears that they may have, whether it's a fear of heights, a fear of roller coasters, a fear of spiders, a fear of whatever? Do you think that this is something that would work for other people conquering whatever fear they have?
I think so. I mean, I've talked to people, you know, as I mentioned, I went to these two weekend classes for trying to cure your fear of flying, but I also went to like a general, weekend seminar thing that was about like curing phobias of all kinds. And so I met people with phobias of all those things you talk about, you know, spiders and, you know, people with a fear of, you know, sometimes very unusual, you know, people had phobias of things that you wouldn't even consider scary at all. You know, I mean, a spider, you can kind of understand because a spider could bite you, you know, but that people would have a phobia of like something very innocuous, a, you know, door handle, you know, this, oh, I can't touch a door handle, I'm scared of that. You think, what, crazy? But I think what can be helpful is, like, you know, it's helple just to kind of, I think sometimes if you have a kind of reaction to something like, oh, this is a scary thing, this is dangerous, I don't feel comfortable doing it. But then if you do it every so often, and each time you do it, it's kind of okay, and try and have a good experience, you try and build in something fun, you know, so you go, okay, I'm going to fly, but when I get there, I'm going to make sure I go to a nice, you know, restaurant and eat something good, or I'm going to visit a friend, or I'm going to take a friend with me. I'm going to invite my buddies. I mean, that was a cool thing. Sometimes my friends would come with me. I'm saying, hey, I'm going here for the day. You know, guys want to come? And quite often they would. And so we'd have a little, you know, fun day out somewhere. And over time, right, you replace this fear reaction with like these happy memories and like good times that you've experienced from something. And I think over time it can help. So like, yeah, maybe if you fear of spiders or something, but if you, you know, went to the zoo, you know, every couple of weeks and just were around the spiders and, okay, gradually you had a good time and you brought your friends with you and maybe you went on a date to the zoo, that kind of thing, then maybe you'd start to develop some happy association with it and the kind of fear response will gradually fade away. So it can work, but it just takes a lot of time. Like, it's not a pleasant thing. And I think, you know, I did it out of, really, it was just necessity because I'd you know, once it's taking you 10 days to take a trip to go to a conference. I mean, that's not sustainable.
Right. No doubt about it. Talking with Michael Story, I've linked to his Substack piece on Facebook at facebook.com/MoranoFan. You could read it. But Michael, since you've been able to conquer this, what have you been able to do? Obviously, you alluded to that Super Forecaster conference. What else that you would have been very limited in doing had you not been able to conquer your fear of flying?
Well, so many things. I mean, I think with a lot of jobs now, if you can't fly very much, you know, it's hard to get a job. You know, I mean, a lot of jobs want you to travel around and do things. I think that's obviously part of the story. But socially, I think it's been very valuable. I mean, the thing that surprised me when I went into this, I was like, okay, I've got a job where it's going to be hard for me. If I can't attend a conference because I can't fly, that's going to be hard for me to do. You know, I'm going to struggle. But what I realized is, actually, there's all these other benefits. I mean, if you fly around a lot, you get to meet a lot of people. People think it's kind of interesting what you're doing, and so they're more likely to meet you. You know, if you just call somebody and say, hey, look, I'm doing this experiment where I'm going to fly somewhere every 10 days. I haven't got anywhere to go this week. I'm going to come see you if you want to meet up. You know, a lot of people will say yes to that. And so you end up like meeting more people and having a kind of, you know, getting a little insight into different things that people are doing. And it's been pretty, it's been pretty big. And in the end, I ended up meeting somebody who became my girlfriend, and then we ended up getting married, and we were working in different parts of the world. And wow. I realize now, looking back, like, we wouldn't have been able to really sustain that relationship if we hadn't been able to fly, you know. So it's pretty, you know, it's something like that. You realize, oh, that totally changes your life. Like, if we'd have met 5 years previously when I was kind of grounded, what would we have done? Right. I don't know. Maybe we would have just had a couple of dates and said, okay, this isn't really going to be practical. So
that's a great example. What's been the feedback to your Substack piece in which you chronicle your efforts to overcome your fear of flying?
Oh, I had some lovely responses from people. It's so nice. Like, I heard from a lot of people who kind of had other things that they found really hard that they had to kind of really work on about themselves and wanted to overcome. So yeah, people with other phobias or people that were like very uncomfortable with something. And they just said, yeah, you know, that experience that they found of like, I'm just going to commit to doing this. It doesn't matter if I do it well. It doesn't matter if I see results straight away. You know, I'm just going to commit to this for the long term and like hope, you know, and trust that if I stick to this for long enough, it's going to pay off. And I think a lot of things in life are like that, right? Like, you know, eating healthy or going to the gym or anything like that. It kind of works like that. So I think that, yeah, I had a lot of very nice response from people. And also a lot of people saying, hey, if you want to come say hi in my city, then come say hi. So that was kind of cool.
But you're not still doing this repeated flying situation now.
No. Well, I still fly now.
As needed, right? You don't go as a chore every 10 days. Well, this is terrific. I've really enjoyed some of the other articles that you've written on a variety of subjects. Tell folks where they can find your Substack, Michael.
Oh, yeah. It's just MW Story, Michael Williams Story, .substack.com. If you want to come check it out there, then that'd be great. Love to have more people reading.
Thank you very much, Michael. I hope we could talk again. I love your piece, and I hope a lot of people will learn lessons in terms of conquering their own fears from reading it.
Oh, thank you, Frank. It's been terrific to be here. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Michael W. Story. If you want to comment on any portion of our discussion, you're welcome to give me a call, 800-848-9222. That's 1-800-848-9222. This is The Other Side of Midnight. Straight ahead.
The Other Side of Midnight.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.